counsel. You ready to proceed?
With the indulgence of the court, I'd like to take a moment to introduce the parties involved in the matter. As the court may know, I'm Richard Gall, representing Haralambos Hionis, who is present in the courtroom. Deidre O'Shea of Georgetown represents Ms. Spence, and David Hutt, also of Georgetown, represents Mr. Shipp. The two main issues that we're asking the court to review carefully, as they always would, and the first has to do with whether or not the legal rights that were in existence in this matter, and when I talk about legal rights, I talk about defective easement, an attempt to create an easement. I believe that creates a legal right to the parties who are involved in the matter. It's either a legal right or an obligation. We would ask the court not to set aside those legal rights that were determined through title searches, through a series of historical matters, on the basis of what an equitable right may be. It would be our request that the court look very carefully at setting aside that possible legal right and not do it unless it feels that there's almost a fraud or some kind of a overriding issue that would require the court to interpose an equitable right in the matter. And I think real estate cases are such that shouldn't be done very often. It should only be done in a circumstance where it's really clear that the parties are committing some kind of a act almost amounting to fraud. And I would submit in this case that is not the example.
What do the cases say about the requirement of fraud or easement by estoppel?
The way I have read the cases is that if you can establish that there is fraud involved in the matter, then the court should take some action. But there's no allegation of fraud in this particular case. This is a case where nobody has attempted to perpetrate a fraud on anybody. But if there's a fraud where somebody's taken an active, taken some action to try to cause a change.
I think that you argued to the Vice Chancellor that fraud was a necessary prerequisite before an easement could be created by estoppel, and he rejected that argument. Is that correct?
I believe he rejected that argument, yes, Your Honor.
Well, why?
I believe he rejected that argument because he was of the belief that wasn't relevant in the case. I may be wrong about this, Your Honor, but I believe he didn't think that this was the relevant issue in this case. I'm submitting that is a relevant issue.
Well, isn't the reason he rejected the argument that fraud was not the only circumstance or condition that would permit the creation of an equitable estoppel or an easement by estoppel? And to accept your position would require the Vice Chancellor, who's a trial judge, to overrule precedent that goes flatly against your position.
Well, I believe you're right that is the case, but at this high level, this court, I believe, needs to set precedent in this area. I haven't seen that this court has rendered a decision in this area. What is going to constitute enough to be able to make the equitable right superior to the legal right?
When you say legal right, I take it you mean by using those words that there can be no easement unless it's recorded as a matter of record and therefore notice to the world. And people's legal right must be nothing more than a right to rely on the recorded record.
You're right, Your Honor. That is my interpretation. The legal right, meaning a document or some kind of a established history that is clear, would be the legal right versus the equitable right.
The easy case is where there's nothing on the ground to indicate possibility of a right-of-way or an easement of any kind, and a person does a title search, and they determine through the title search that there's no recorded easement. That, coupled with the fact there's no indication on the ground there is one, would be your best case. But in this case, there was a visible right-of-way being used, wasn't there?
There was a we'll call it a license. That's what I would prefer to call it. There was a license to use an area across my client's
Well, the license is a legal term. There, I used right-of-way as a physical term, not a legal term.
Okay.
Perhaps I could have used, there was a gravel road on the ground.
All right.
Now, that gives the prospective purchaser notice that somebody's using the land they're about to buy. What's the obligation that they have to determine what the license, what the easement, what the right-of-way as a matter of law may be before they purchase?
And that is, in the history of real estate, is to check titles, to check deeds, to check whatever references there are with respect to these easements, and that's what occurred.
Right, but does a reasonable person do the title search and see that there's no recorded easement of any kind, and then just determine that, well, then there shouldn't be a problem. I can go ahead and destroy the gravel roadway. I can cut off access that anyone might have to their land with impunity. Is that a reasonable approach?
No, Your Honor, it's not reasonable. I would submit that maybe an additional investigation should occur. And in this case, there was a survey. And the survey revealed that somebody was using part of that land. I think there was a further investigation.
Now, if we're to expand on whatever the existing doctrine may be, where do we go from there? Where do we say, okay, there's no recorded easement that creates the kind of legal right that you're discussing, but there has been long-term use of this lane and somebody's getting access to their property by virtue of that gravel road? Where does equity step in? What line do we draw to say equity does or does not step in?
I think there are two answers to that. One is the gaining possession by adverse possession, 20 years would solve one of the parts of that problem. Before we get to the 20 years, I think there has to be enough evidence there that would lead one to believe that there, in fact, is an easement, that it's some kind of right that somebody's asserting. And if that's present, then I think it puts the person on notice. There's no doubt that my client knew that gravel road was there. He didn't. My client didn't know that gravel road was by virtue of a license or an easement or anything before he
knew it was there, and he knew that the defendants were using the road, that they had a claim of right to use the road. He also knew, because he had his lawyer check the title, that there was no easement that corresponded to the contours of that road. And what you're saying is that it didn't matter whether he knew that there was a road in the ground or a claim of entitlement. If it wasn't on the record, then he was not bound to honor that claim in any way or to recognize it once he acquired title. Isn't that your position?
That is
even
pretty
if it's
much
inequitable, as long as the inequity doesn't rise to the level of fraud.
That's well stated, Your Honor. I wish I could have said that. Well, that's exactly my client's position. That it is a.
Now the next step is, what case law do you have to support that position?
Well, I don't think there is a case in this state that supports that position, and that's why we're before.
Okay, is there a case law that the Vice Chancellor found that's opposite to that position?
Well, one of the cases he cited was one that he had previously decided against the person trying to establish the equitable right, and that was the Carriage Realty Partnership case. In that case, the case itself, he decided that the person claiming the equitable interest could not establish it, but he set some, I guess you call them guidelines or parameters, which would be considered in coming to the conclusion of whether the equitable estoppel could be used in that case. And in, in this case, he used that as basis for saying that the equitable estoppel would apply in this case we're here before the court on. And it's our submission that, or it's our belief that he went too far on that. I think all the cases that have granted an equitable estoppel have been commercial cases or exceptional cases. This is a homeowner type case. This isn't any commercial transaction, and so it's our submission that this should not. This doesn't raise to the level that equitable estoppel should be granted.
Well, the cases that are cited in the briefs and in his opinion suggest that easement by estoppel, which is the phrase used, requires a promise which is believed and reasonably relied on. And there is no statement that fraud is required in order to create the easement.
And our argument, my client's argument in this case is that it's clear and easy to decide a case if there's fraud, but I think in order to for the court to allow an equitable remedy in areas other than in fraud, there's a heavy burden of establishing that some things were done that were inappropriate in the matter, and that's not in this case. My client was not involved at all in the process of establishing where that roadway would have been, so therefore there is no instance where he, who wasn't the owner at the time, should be held to the standard of acting in such a manner not as to affect the rights of the...
Mr. Gall.
Yes.
Let's put to one side for a moment your client.
Yes.
And focus on the transaction as between the your client's predecessor, the prior owner.
Yes.
And the ships. Would you agree that as between those two persons, there were the circumstances would give rise to an easement by estoppel? Even though that the particular easement at issue here wasn't recorded, or at least wasn't recorded for 6 years?
Well,
it's a yes or a no.
I would like to say that no, because I believe, Your Honor, that this is such an informal arrangement that went on between Mr. Shipp, who was a builder and understood title issues, and the realtors who were selling or who had sold property to Shipp and who granted him...
Which element of estoppel is not there if you focus solely on the transaction between the Shipps and your client's predecessor?
Yeah, what I'm saying is that I don't think it raises to the level where equity should set aside the legal rights. There was never a good easement recorded. There was never
You're saying there shouldn't be a doctrine called easement by estoppel?
Should I say that? No, I think there must be a doctrine of easement by estoppel.
Well, why wouldn't it exist here?
I'm saying
there was a promise. There was a promise. Mm-hmm. Mr. Shipp relied on it. He relied on it. He believed it. He relied on it reasonably because he expended real dollars to put underneath the road utilities. He expanded the length of the road. You know, putting aside your client's rights and interests, what's the problem as between those two landowners?
Well, and the facts in this case, I think, just state that the then landowner, before Mr. Hyonis bought it, said, do what you want to do. That's the essence of what they did. Do what you want to do. You can use any place you want to use for the roadway. I don't think there was anything more than an acknowledgement that these people could drive across some driveway to get to their property. I don't think there was any formalization of the process. If there had been a formalization, there wouldn't even be payment. There wasn't
anything. We wouldn't be here if there had been a formalization of the process. Well, because they would have recorded the easement that is an issue here.
Well, that may be the case, Your Honor. But the distinction between the case would be that if they did have more negotiations, if they understood what they were doing, I'm not sure that the owners of the other property had any knowledge of whether or not they were.
What difference does it make if the owners of the other property had any knowledge? This is as between these two landowners. Mm-hmm. If there was an easement by estoppel, as between those two, putting aside the rest of the world, mm-hmm. then your client's predecessor in title would have title to the property in question subject to the easement, would he not? Subject to the easement.
Well, that's in effect.
And therefore, when he conveyed the title to that property, the title would be subject to the easement because that's all the title he had to convey.
I agree, Your Honor. That would be the result. But I'm maintaining that in this case, it still was not enough.
Because your client, in effect, was a bona fide purchaser without notice.
Yeah, he's a purchaser like thousands of people are always buying these products. They have no notice of this situation.
You're in your rebuttal time. Did you want to save it?
Yes. Thank you, Ron.
May it please the court, my name is David Hutt. I'm a lawyer with Wilson, Howard, and Byard. I represent the defendant, or the appellee, Donald W. Shipp, Jr., in this matter. Mr. Gall began his argument by stating that the court needs to carefully consider these matters and weigh them because there isn't an established legal right. I believe that the Chief Justice indicated that amounted to there wasn't a recorded document to put the world on notice of that. The Vice Chancellor in the court below recognized that this is an equitable right that will affect legal rights, and he applied a heightened evidentiary standard of clear and convincing evidence to the evidence that was brought before him on the cross motions for summary judgment. When he applied that heightened evidentiary standard, which he required the defendants to establish in order to set forth the easement, he found that the undisputed facts in this matter that were presented established a right to an easement by estoppel.
That may be valid as between the two original landowners, putting aside Mr. Hyonas. That is, it may well be that the conduct of Mr. Hyonas' predecessor would have stopped that owner from denying that there's an easement that corresponds to the road, the deer path and the extended road. But why would that have stopped Mr. Hyonas? I mean, doesn't the party that's estopped have to do something inequitable in order to be estopped? And if so, what did Mr. Hyonas do that was inequitable?
I don't believe that the law states that he has to do something inequitable in order to be estopped. When he purchased the land, the question was, does he have actual or constructive notice that a neighboring or adjacent property owner...
Well, he didn't have actual... he didn't have constructive notice, correct? I mean, there's nothing on the record that showed a recorded easement that corresponded to the road, the gravel road.
I would argue that there is a recorded easement. There are two recorded easements. The one that was recorded just 2 months prior to his actual purchase of the property, while technically defective because it purports to be from a partnership when the land was actually owned by those two partners individually, would put a person on notice that somebody thinks that they have a claim, and this is a race state, and if that's of record before you purchase, you're at least on notice that there's somebody out there that thinks they have an easement right across your property.
And would it matter to your case if that defective recording had not been recorded at all? That is, does your case depend on the recording of that easement defective though it might have been technically, prior to the Mr. Hyonis actually acquiring title?
I don't believe that the case is, that's not the keystone. I believe that's one of the parts of the evidence of this that indicates that there was an intent to create an enduring privilege.
Well, how would you distinguish between an easement by estoppel and a prescriptive easement? If you had a situation where someone was going across the land for 20 years without the person's permission, it's equivalent to adverse possession and it creates a prescriptive easement. And when a third party would buy land later on, that could be litigated, and the person who wanted to establish the prescriptive easement would say, look, I've been doing this for more than 20 years, I get to still do it. And probably the subsequent purchaser would lose. Justice Jacobs' question is, here you have something for less than 20 years. Someone's been going across the property. There's no record notice. And they want to assert their rights as the recorded property owner to keep the other person from going across. Why is the new purchaser stopped from doing that?
Because he had actual notice of the easement. His time coming into the subdivision that is adjacent to this predates when my client bought property, the 6.2 acres. He probably watched the road get installed, watched for 18 years as people drove back and forth. When he signed the purchase contract to purchase the 1.5 acres, which is burdened by the easement, or by the right-of-way, he commissioned a survey. The survey said there's a gravel path that extends across this land. His attorney, his settlement attorney, then writes a letter to Mr. Shipp and says, we think where you have your gravel path is not an, you don't have an easement right for that. Mr. Shipp does not respond to that because he says, I do. I'm going to keep doing what I've done. About 2 years go by. Mr. Hyonis continues through with the purchase. Doesn't ask for a reduction in price. He just continues through with the purchase of the property. He was on notice that something is going on that piece of land. There are people that are crossing over to get to other land across his land.
He's on notice of something.
Correct.
The question is, what is the something? Isn't the something that he was on notice of akin to a list pendens? That is, that he may be buying a lawsuit where the claim is that there's a right to an easement, that there's an easement right.
I believe so. I mean, he's buying the property and saying, I'm going to take the risk that maybe that person has a clear easement right, and maybe they don't.
Well, what does the record show with respect to the title insurance he got at closing? Was there an exception for the road, or did the title insurance certify over that?
The title insurance policy has never been part of the record in this case, Ron.
Would he believe that the person using the gravel road had a license to use the road, and the license that could be canceled by him as a new owner? Is there a reason for him to believe that? Since there's nothing recorded that establishes a greater right of use.
My response to that is twofold. That would certainly be one possibility for that roadway.
Why isn't it a logical one, since nothing's recorded to the contrary?
Well, there was a document.
Nothing effective that's recorded to the contrary.
There was a document that was recorded 2 months prior to his closing.
Now, I understand that, but you said it was defective, and the way you explained it, it sounds like it's defective. There's nothing in the record that suggests it's anything other than defective. So, okay, there's a document that's recorded. Why wouldn't he consider it nonetheless to be a license that he could cancel when he assumed title to the property?
He may assume that, but I think he's taking a risk. He sees that there's no other means of access to these properties other than this road. And
okay, let's assume that's true. Then why would equity then enter into it if what he was doing made sense, given the state of the record? Why does equity intervene and create this estoppel, easement by estoppel? Why does it make sense for equity to intervene and create?
Because he had notice. He could physically see what was going on. There was a document, though technically defective, that was recorded describing that easement.
But we just established, didn't we, that he was on notice that somebody was using a roadway, but he had no notice of their exact legal claim to that roadway. It could have been a license. It could have been no authority at all to use it. They could have just exercised their own independent action without any contact. There could have been an attempt to create an easement that failed because one of the persons that needed to sign the document refused to do so, denying that there was an easement by refusing to sign it. Or it might have been, might make sure I don't slip into the vernacular, a half attempt at creating an easement. And even if it were the intentions of the parties to create an easement, it didn't effectively get done. So what I would like you to tell me is, why under these circumstances should equity intervene, and what is the case law that suggests that equity must on these facts, since apparently both sides agree that the facts are well established and there's no need for a trial, since both move for summary judgment?
The reason, Your Honor, that I would submit that the Vice Chancellor correctly found that there was an easement by estoppel is the notice reasons that we just discussed. You're put on inquiry notice that you can physically see. Mr. Hyonis acknowledged in the request for admissions that were submitted, yeah, I've seen him drive across it for the entire existence of the roadway.
Let's approach it a different way. You don't get any adverse rights if someone lets you do something with permission. Let's suppose that there are two neighbors and one says to the other neighbor, you can walk across my yard, and a path is created, but it's done with permission. And then the neighbor said, well, you know, I've been walking across the path, but I always get muddy in rainy weather. I'd like to improve it and put boards, macadam, whatever you want to do. And the owner says, fine, if you want to do that, that's fine with me. And then later on, there's a sale. But why should the new purchaser be bound by that? If the person who's got the path is improving it at their own risk, and they don't have any formal agreements, and they're not doing it, establishing any adverse rights. And the reason I ask that question is, my second question is, what's the implication of ruling in your favor? Because you seem to suggest that if you're going to buy a property and you see a macadam path on your land, if you buy it, but you don't find anything recorded, then when the neighbors say, we've been going across that path for a long time, less than 20 years, and we've improved it, you're a stop from denying us access. That would be the rule that you would have us establish, wouldn't you?
I don't think that the rule, I hope that the rule would not be that broad. What we are attempting to apply here is the essence of the doctrine of the easement by estoppel. Is there evidence that this was more than just you can walk across and then, well, if you wanted to pave it or something, fine. There was more evidence than that. The more evidence is we have a letter from 1991 or 1992 from the prior owner to Mr. Shipp saying, we thought we gave you an easement. We have an easement executed in 93 that wasn't recorded for 6 years and is technically defective. We have in 1996 another easement that's executed. There were attempts that were made. Based on those attempts, Mr. Shipp relied on those, subdivided his property, entered into a commercial transaction with Ms. Spencer, sold property, invested time and effort and had utilities installed. I would submit, Your Honor, that based on those facts, you have evidence here that there was an intent that this was not a license agreement.
Are you saying, and I'm being trying to be very precise here and following up on Justice Holland's question, that the party that's estopped, if there is an estoppel at all, would be the party that granted the alleged easement to Mr. Shipp. Correct?
Correct.
He would be estopped to deny that he created that property right.
Correct.
Is it also your position that that Mr. Hyonis is estopped, or is it your position that Mr. Hyonis is simply bound because he had notice, the requisite notice, whatever that might be?
If I said yes, that would not be a good answer. But I believe he's estopped because he is estopped because he had the inquiry notice. If you are not involved in Sussex Food, the court said for an unrecorded easement to affect a subsequent purchaser, there has to be.
Is that my question? Is that really what the court held? And if so, is that right? Isn't it? The real subtext that Mr. Even though there may not have been notice to the world in the form of an effectively created easement that was recorded, there was enough information that went to Mr. Hyonas that put him on notice, and that the reason he is bound is because of the notice, not because he did anything to warrant being stopped.
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
So your answer would be that if there is an estoppel, it would only run to Mr. Hyonas, to the party that created the easement, that is, that allowed Mr. Shipp to use the road and to improve on it.
So long as we would agree that the subsequent purchaser who has that notice is also bound by that estoppel, yes.
Bound, but not estopped. Bound because of the notice, not because that party did something that warrants being estopped as well.
Correct, and that may give Mr. Hyonas a claim that he was defrauded by the person who sold him land and did not give him notice that he was selling land subject to an easement.
You lost me there. I followed your argument up into that point. It seemed that what you were saying is that there were two ways to get notice. You could have record notice, which was not here to the extent it was defective, or you could have actual notice. And I thought you were going to say if you purchase land with actual notice, even though the record notice was either incomplete, non-existent, or defective, then based on your acquisition with that notice, you were bound by the agreement you had notice of. But you apparently are not saying that.
I thought that's what it was. We did say the first owner would be estopped. The second person is bound by them.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Deirdre O'Shea on behalf of the defendant below, appellee Susan Spencer. There are just a few important facts to add to Mr. Hutt's argument. Ms. Spencer purchased the property in 1999 after the road was already in existence, after the defective easement was recorded. She had no knowledge, unlike Shipp, she had no knowledge of any claim of Hyonas to that, what she believed was an existing valid easement. I believe that the easement by estoppel was created between Shipp and Kaufman and Rickards, and that Hyonas took, subject to that easement, the record evidence is unrefuted that he had actual notice of the roadway.
Doesn't your client's position rise or fall with Mr. Shipp's?
It does, but I believe my client's position is a little bit stronger.
In other words, even if Mr. Shipp were to lose, your client still has easement rights?
No. I mean, if Mr. Shipp loses, my client loses.
All right. So is there anything by way of a legal position or contention that your client has to add to what's already been, we've already been told by Mr. Shipp's counsel?
Well, to point out that Hyonas' proposal is that Shipp should access his property via the 1996 easement, which crosses the top of the triangle. If that were the case, in order to access his property, he would have to cross over my client's property and create an easement that's not in existence presently. Otherwise, his property would be landlocked. So as a matter of equity, it doesn't make sense to charge my client with an easement when there's already a pre-existing easement that Hyonas had actual.
You're knowledge. Saying there would be a landlock unless an easement were created over your client's property?
Over my client's property.
so that would generate more litigation.
Yes. Unless there's further questions, that was.
But is it your position that if you buy property with notice of an easement and the easement turns out to be defective, but you can independently establish the validity of the relationship that would have otherwise resulted in a valid easement, then the easement should be honored by the purchaser? Is that relevant at all, the fact that they, if they would have gotten it right, there would have been the purchase of the property with record notice, and that it's inequitable here to say that the defect in the easement should somehow deny what the parties intended?
I believe that is my position.
So your client would prevail because there was basically an ineffective attempt to create record notice, but that there was some record notice.
There was some record notice in existence, and as well as the actual existence of the roadway.
Thank you.
One or two comments to make in rebuttal. There's been several references to the fact that my client went through the settlement and didn't have a reduction in price. If he thought that he wasn't getting what he had paid for, then he would have maybe had a reduction in price. He thought that he was getting a property that was not impaired by a
Well, what's your response to my last question? If your client buys property and there's an easement of record, turns out it's defective, but if everything had been done correctly, it would have been an effective easement. And then subsequent to the purchase, discovers it's a defective easement, why wouldn't estoppel operate in that respect? That you've got an easement, you don't get it all sorted out, and it looks after the fact like you're trying to capitalize on a defect in the easement, although the parties who tried to record it and give you notice just didn't get it right.
Well, my client and his attorney did not feel that there was an effective easement there, so that's the first answer to that. Now, had they anticipated...
So their position was, this is just a nullity. Whatever these people filed is just worthless. And that was absolutely clear to them, and it would have been clear to the world.
And in addition, a letter went forth from that settlement attorney's office and said, stop using it, you don't have any rights there. And then, so that was the position that was taken at that time, Your Honor, that it was ineffective and not something that had to be observed. And maybe that was not a prudent approach to the matter. I can't say that, but
he was rolling the dice a little bit, wasn't he?
I mean,
he had to be on notice that there's a claim, an adverse claim.
I think you're right, Your Honor. I can't deny that there was some notice that everybody had. This is not a misstatement. I mean, there was some notice that something was going on there. But
he decided on the advice of his attorney, decided to gamble that the absence of any recorded effective easement would trump any equities that might otherwise exist.
I would say that's probably a summary of what...
Remind me, who was the settlement attorney in this case?
Mr. Tomasetti in Fenwick Island.
And is the title policy or anything of record? Do we know whether there was an exception for this, or it was the deed showed no exception for the...
I have attempted on three occasions to get a copy of the title policy and have been unsuccessful in that. So I cannot answer the court's question.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Thank you.